Overcoming Obstacles from the sermon series, The Making of a Leader. If you'd like information about this or any other Living Word sermon series, give our toll-free number a call. It's 1-800-366-9673. That's 1-800-366-9673. Or visit livingword.org on the Internet. All profits from tape sales are used to purchase radio time to spread the Living Word around the world. And now, here's Brother Bob Russell.
The nomination of Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court was expected to finally be approved after days of arduous politicking and probing testimony before the Senate. Almost no stone had been left unturned by his opponents, but he was not prepared for the surprising last-minute testimony of his former employee, Anita Hill. Ms. Hill testified that 10 years earlier, Thomas had made lewd sexual comments to her when they worked together. According to his friend, Senator Jack Danforth of Missouri, who sponsored him, Clarence Thomas was devastated. In his book, Resurrection, The Confirmation of Clarence Thomas, the senator reports that Thomas could not understand why someone would drum up such charges against him. He had hired Anita Hill, a young lawyer, as a favor to an old friend, and she had followed him willingly to his newest post in Washington, D.C., long after the alleged incidents had occurred. Thomas said, "I have not always been a Christian, and I have done things in my past I should not have done, but the accusations brought by Miss Hill were not true. An FBI investigation brought convincing evidence that the charges were unfounded, but nevertheless, Anita Hill was permitted to testify before the Congressional Committee and before a national television audience." More than half a dozen women who had worked with Clarence Thomas testified under oath that he was a man of outstanding character and integrity. Yet the media and Thomas' opponents with the accusations. "Why are they doing this to me?" Thomas kept asking in private. "Why are they trying to destroy me?" If you dare to lead, you will encounter obstacles. Now, we don't have anybody here nominated for the Supreme Court, but we have a lot of leaders and potential leaders here in the church, the family, education, media, politics, business arenas. The obstacles we encounter are not as well publicized as those of Clarence Thomas, but there will be opposition, trouble, and criticism for us. Jesus said, "In the world you will have tribulation." How we cope with those obstacles will determine the effectiveness of our leadership and influence. That was true of this man, Moses. Moses received a dynamic call from God at the burning bush to go to Pharaoh and demand the release of his people. Moses tried to cast the vision for the doubting Israelites and for the stubborn Pharaoh. It was a struggle, but eventually the Hebrew people were freed. Almost 2 million Israelites and a few believing Jews trudged boldly out of Egypt with their eye focused on a new land of promise. But Moses encountered some ominous obstacles along the way. Let's look at the three major trials that he faced so that when similar challenges arise in our lives, we'll cope with them in an appropriate way. The first obstacle Moses encountered was hostile opposition. Pharaoh soon regretted that he had released the Israelite slaves. The final of the 10 plagues had finally broken his heart. The firstborn son of every Egyptian family had died, including the son of Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh relented and said to the Israelites, "You may go. Your people are a curse to our nation." But a few hours later, Pharaoh changed his mind. "What am I doing?" he thought. "We are losing all of our manpower." So he ordered his army to pursue the Israelites and bring them back. Exodus 14, verse 9, the Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea. If you dare to be a leader, there will be times when you face intense opposition, especially if you try to lead people toward Jesus Christ. That may come in the form of a lawsuit from people who want to pad their own pocketbook. That may come in the form of a competitor who is threatened by you and will do anything he or she can to stop your success. It may come from government authorities who are suspicious of your motives or who want to levy the highest taxes possible. It may come from an antagonistic press that wants to portray you in a bad light. It may come in the form of co-workers or family members who think you are mistaken. But a leader has to be determined to press on in spite of opposition. Moses said to the Israelites, "Do not be afraid, stand firm. Don't run from those Egyptians and don't wave the white flag and go back to them. You stand firm." You see, it is human nature to be intimidated by an imposing opponent and to react according to their threats. Because nobody wants a lawsuit. Nobody wants bad publicity. Nobody wants hard feelings. But the leader must always refuse to let the opposition set the agenda. Sometimes that means standing up and fighting. Sometimes it means finding another way to accomplish the same goal. Sometimes it means just standing still and waiting for God's timing. But the opponents don't kill the vision. They don't take the eye off the goal. Let me give you a practical example. Some of you young parents here have a goal of training your children to know the Lord. You want to rear your children according to the biblical standard. That means that you teach them to respect authority. You teach them first-time obedience. You teach them manners. And it seems to be working. Your children seem to be doing well. But you're shocked that members of your family, people you think should be supporting you, think that you're being too rigid in insisting that your children say please and thank you or address an adult as Mr. and Mrs. And you may have liberal friends who are appalled at the idea that you would ever spank your child, no matter how defiant. Now, when you have that kind of opposition in any kind of leadership role, you need to ask two questions. Number one, what does God want me to do? And number two, how are people going to react? What's going to be the best for people in the long run? And how are people going to respond? Both questions are important, but anytime you allow question number two to take precedent over question number one, then you're in trouble. The leader has to keep his eye on the goal, which is pleasing God. Moses said to the Israelites, "You stand firm. Don't be frightened by the opposition." Remember Joshua saying to the people who opposed him, "You choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of Egypt or the gods of the Amorites, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Pharaoh's opposition presented a second obstacle for Moses, and that is perilous circumstances. Verse 10 reads, "As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them, and they were terrified." Well, you can understand why. This was a fearful circumstance. The Israelites had no training in military, and they had no weaponry, and here came the most powerful army in the world thundering after them. And in front of them was the Red Sea, thousands of feet across, hundreds of feet deep. There was no way to go. They were trapped. The situation looked hopeless. Now, when you lead, there will be times when circumstances seem insurmountable. If you are a leader, you will encounter one obstacle after another. And effective leaders learn to anticipate problems. Just about the time you think you've got things under control, something else goes wrong. There's an old saying, there's no gain without pain. There's no promised land without a Red Sea. An effective leader confronts an obstacle before it becomes an emergency. John Maxwell wrote, "Great leaders are seldom blindsided. They recognize the punch that knocks them out is seldom the hard one. It's the one they didn't see coming." Back in Exodus 14, verse 4, "Before the Egyptian army arrived, God said to Moses, 'Pharaoh's coming out after you. You be ready.'" Moses wasn't blindsided by this attack. You see, part of the leader's responsibility is to see problems in advance. A leader has to be perceptive and read circumstances and sense people's moods before the situation becomes a crisis. So many obstacles can be overcome if they are confronted early before they become emergencies. That's why Lee Iacocca said, "A good leader makes a decision when 95% of the information is in." If you wait until you're 100% sure, you've waited too long. Effective leaders also recognize the difference between obstacles and impossibilities. An obstacle can be overcome with God's help through courage, perseverance, and teamwork. But an impossibility cannot be overcome without a miracle of God. And that takes patient prayer. Is $90 million for a downtown arena to play basketball an obstacle or an impossibility? Well, somebody has to decide if it can be done in addition to two bridges and a football stadium. Reminds me, though, of the church that wanted a new building, but they didn't want the inconvenience of relocating, and they didn't want to pay too high a price, so they passed four resolutions. Number one, they would build a new building. Number two, they would build the new building on the site of the old building. Number three, they would use the material from the old building to build the new building. And number four, they would continue to meet in the old building till the new building was complete. You know, there's some obstacles that are impossibilities, and they have to be accepted as such, and a new strategy developed. I think God sometimes puts us in situations that are impossible. He puts us between the Red Sea and the Egyptian army so that we will have to trust in Him. Moses recognized this circumstance as impossible unless the Lord intervened. So in verses 13 and 14, he told the people, "Don't be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you'll never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." When you face an impossible circumstance, be courageous, trust God, be still, wait for His deliverance. Somebody said the bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the turn. Now, God was going to provide a strange turn of events for the Israelites. But they had to wait, and they had to trust, and then they had to follow His directional signs. Moses encountered a third obstacle, and that was disgruntled followers. Verse 10b, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, there were the Egyptians, and they were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, now notice that they did the right thing, they cried out to the Lord, but their prayer was very brief and very unbelieving, because as soon as they said amen, they began to complain to Moses, and they were very caustic in their criticism. Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us up here to die? What a caustic statement. Egypt was a land of graves. The pyramids are huge tombstones to the dead. The Israelites were the slaves building those pyramids. Were there not big enough graves in Egypt for you, Moses? You brought us out here to die. And they were accusatory. What have you done by bringing us out of Egypt? Well, it was God who brought them out of Egypt, but they needed somebody to blame. And so they fingered Moses and said, "It's your fault, Moses, you and your big plans." And they were disrespectful. "Didn't we tell you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? We told you so, Moses. We should have never listened to you." And they were negative. "It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." That army had not come out there to kill them. The army had come out there to recapture them and return them to slavery. But frightened, emotional people always exaggerate the problem and lose their vision. These selfish, cowardly, critical people had to be a real test for Moses' resolve at that time. Rick Warren suggests that God teaches us to love by putting us around people we don't like. A co-worker, a client, a customer who's hard to get along with, to see how we'll do. I think he's right. How many of you have to work every day with people you don't like? People who are negative and sour. How many of you have to work with people you don't like? Now, don't point if they're here in the service. But many of you, you just work every day with people who are hard to get along with. And Moses had these critical, negative people that had to really test his leadership. But if you dare to lead, you can anticipate disgruntled, critical followers. I read about a female lion tamer who was the hit of the circus. She was beautiful, she was poised, she was in control of the animals. And her grand finale was she'd put her whip down, and the fiercest lion of all would come and just meekly put his paws on her shoulder, give her a hug, and nuzzle her ear. Everyone in the audience thundered approval, with the exception of one man who stood up and said, "Ah, that's nothing. Anybody could do that." The ringmaster, irritated, said, "Really, sir? Would you like to try?" He said, "Well, sure, but first get those lions out of there." If you dare to lead, there, no matter how impressive or how successful your leadership, there's always somebody who can do it better, who would do it differently. They may not know what they're talking about, but they will be very vocal. Because not everybody believes your dream is possible. Not everybody wants to pay the price. Not everybody has confidence in your ability to lead. If you try to lead, there will be disgruntled followers. Now, when a leader is criticized, he or she needs to evaluate the criticism. It may be true, and maybe we need to make corrections. If it's not true, once in a while it needs to be answered if it's a real threat to the future. But most of the time, criticism just needs to be ignored. Nehemiah was commissioned by God to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. He did an effective job, but right in the middle, some people in the area began to criticize him. Two men, Sanballat and Tobiah, sent him a letter asking Nehemiah to come to a summit where they could air their grievances. Nehemiah gave a classic answer. He said, "I'm doing an important work, and I can't come down." When you respond to criticism, you give your critic credibility. When you respond to criticism, you give the critic a forum to express the criticism again and keep it stirred up. And you turn your attention away from your primary calling and you get defensive. God did not tell Moses, "Now answer those critics." God told Moses, "You raise your staff, you stretch out your hand over the sea, and I'll see to it that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground and they'll be quiet." Exodus 14:19 reads, "Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other side, so neither went near the other all night long." God just put a hold on the situation, came between the two groups. "Then Moses stretched his hand out over the sea, and God performed a spectacular miracle. All that night, the wind drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land." March 16, 1992, USA Today carried an article entitled "Bible Story Explained." It read, "10 hours of continuous gale force winds could have parted the Red Sea as described in the biblical account of the Israelites' flight from Egypt," researchers say, "and an abrupt change in wind would have caused the waters to come crashing back and drown the Egyptian pursuers," says a study by two meteorologists. The scientists based their findings on complex calculations of the interaction of water and wind. Most scholars believe the Israelites crossed the Red Sea's long and shallow Gulf of Suez, where wind can lift a large amount of water, researchers say. Now, whether the scientists prove that it's possible or not really doesn't matter. God performed a spectacular miracle here. I heard of a young boy who visited a very liberal church, and the Sunday school teacher taught that the children of Israel crossed the Red Sea where it was just 6 inches deep all the way across, kind of swamp land. And the little boy said, "Wow, what a miracle." And the teacher said, "No, it wasn't a miracle, it was just 6 inches deep." Yeah, he said, "Wow, what a miracle that God could drown all those Egyptians in 6 inches of water." God performed a miracle. Moses gave 4 commands: fear not, stand firm, be still, move on. They moved on, crossed the Red Sea on dry ground. The Egyptian army was drowned in pursuit. Now the slaves were free. They danced and they celebrated on the other side. And Moses was vindicated as a leader, at least temporarily. Now, there are 2 lessons that leaders should learn from this story of Moses. The first is this: obstacles are sometimes our most promising opportunity to lead others with God's help. Obstacles are often our most promising opportunity to lead others with God's help. Moses' most perilous moment turned into be his greatest accomplishment, crossing the Red Sea. Time magazine several weeks ago had an article entitled "The Curse of Good Times," and it pointed out that throughout American history, the presidents that are noted for greatness are the ones that led the nation through a national emergency, like Lincoln through the Civil War, Roosevelt through the Great Depression. The obstacles actually became their opportunity for greatness. Remember what Paul said when he was in prison? He said, "Brothers, I want you to know that the things that have happened to me have happened to advance the gospel. Because of my chains, the whole palace guard has come to know the Lord." Obstacles that frighten you just may be your greatest opportunity to lead others with God's help. The second lesson is this. Impossibilities are always God's opportunity to lead us if we'll trust Him. Impossibilities are always God's opportunity to lead us if we'll trust Him. God sometimes brings us to the point where there's nowhere we can go, so that we have to call out on Him and wait for Him to part the Red Sea. Somebody said, our extremity is God's opportunity. And when we turn to Him in faith and perseverance, He shows us a way out. That's why Galatians 6:9 reads, "Let us not be weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we don't give up." When I started this sermon with an example from Clarence Thomas, I imagine some of you said, "I wonder why he's using Clarence Thomas as an example." If you feel that way, I would suggest you read the book Resurrection, The Confirmation of Clarence Thomas by Senator John Danforth, senator from Missouri for 14 years. He reports, "In his moments of despair, the only hope Clarence Thomas found was his belief that God was with him and that God called him to this position. Although he hadn't had aspirations for the Supreme Court previously, he knew that to give up the fight after the allegations by Anita Hill would be to give some credence to her story and the methods of his enemies to destroy him." And Danforth describes an unforgettable scene in his office in which, before Clarence Thomas went out to make his speech, Mr. and Mrs. Danforth and the Thomases joined hands and had a prayer for Clarence Thomas's strength when his strength was completely gone. And then Senator Danforth played a tape of the song Onward Christian Soldiers. Then Thomas wrote on the folder that held his speech the phrase, "In the name of Christ." Moments later, Thomas declared his stirring rebuttal to Hill's charges in a speech about high-tech lynching, a speech that turned the tide. And evidence was presented which showed the inconsistencies of Anita Hill's testimony, and Thomas was confirmed as a Supreme Court justice, but his reputation has been tarnished in the minds of many. An unknown author wrote the following commandments of leadership that are an inspiration to me. I use them in closing. People are illogical, unreasonable, and self-centered. Love and trust them anyway. If you do good, people will accuse you of ulterior motives. Do good anyway. If you are successful, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. The service you render today will be forgotten tomorrow. Serve people anyway. Honesty and frankness will make you vulnerable. Be honest and frank anyway. The biggest men with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest men with the smallest ideas. Think big anyway. People pretend to love the little people, but they sell their souls to the big people. Love little people anyway. What you spend years building can be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. People really need help, but they may attack you if you try to help them. Help people anyway. Give the world the best you can and you'll get kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you can anyway. You know who did that as a leader? Jesus Christ. He saw our hopeless situation, trapped between our accuser, our adversary, and the sea of death. And He came down to this earth to help us, to stand between us. And people kicked Him in the teeth and spit in His face and crucified Him. But by that crucifixion, He provided a way through the sea of death. And 1 Corinthians 10 says, if we walk through the sea of baptism, the waters wash away through the blood of Jesus Christ our sin, and we will never see them again, and God doesn't see them again. And we are free from the slavery of sin and death and the law. And we are following our leader to the promised land of eternal life. If you have not made Jesus Christ your leader and your Savior, He's really the only one worth following. We offer the opportunity for you to step forward boldly and say, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. I'm willing to follow Him as He leads me.
You have been listening to The Living Word with Brother Bob Russell from Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. Today's Living Word message was tape number 1952, Overcoming Obstacles, from the sermon series, The Making of a Leader. If you'd like information about this or any other Living Word sermon series, give our toll-free number a call. It's 1-800-366-9673. That's 1-800-366-9673. Or visit livingword.org on the Internet. The Living Word is a listener-supported program. Thank you for your continued support. And please listen again next time for another edition of The Living Word.